All right, last session of the day on a Friday. Thank you all for coming. So I'm Neil McCarthy. I'm a product manager at Yammer on the platform team. And with me today I have Tuan Ma, who's one of our developers, and also Jose Cambone, who is another developer. So what we're going to do today is talk about the Yammer platform, the philosophy behind it, why we designed it the way we did, kind of what it's all about. Sort of briefly, because then we want to jump into a sample app that we built specifically for this this presentation. We're going to dive into the code, show you how to integrate with the Yammer platform, and then we're at the end going to talk about the various resources that we have to support our developer community. Okay, so building enterprise web and client apps with the Yammer platform. Okay, so by a show of hands, who here has actually created a Yammer account and used Yammer? All right, more than I thought, actually. I think we're growing. Okay. So then, by a show of hands, who has started to play with the APIs that we have at all? Okay, good. You're at the right place. Okay, so for the people who haven't used Yammer, I'm just going to go through like two, three quick slides of kind of what it is, because otherwise, like, if I don't do this, then the API stuff won't make much sense. Okay, so Yammer is a freemium product, which means anybody can sign up. You have to sign up with your corporate email address because you're going to be grouped together automatically into a private network just for your company based on the email domain of the email address that you use to sign up. So you sign up, you get an email, you click on the activation link, you're in, and you're automatically in this, you know, Facebook-like social experience, but just with your other coworkers. So the primary form of communication in Yammer are messages, of course. There's what we call the publisher at the top, where a user puts their cursor, types a message, attaches a file if they want to, an image, anything that they want, and then clicks post, and then that message shows up in the feed. So that's that kind of arrow at the bottom there. So that's kind of our like user-generated content. It's what most people use Yammer for, but we have all this structured data in Yammer, and these activities happening around structured data in Yammer, like people uploading files, and people installing applications, and people creating groups. So there are all these activities going on. We want to make users aware that these things are happening because they might be relevant to the user that's logged into Yammer right now. But we don't want to overwhelm the user-generated content in the feed with a whole bunch of activity stories that aren't really. That are just much more like frequent than the messages that are getting posted there. So what we do with those activities is we put them in the right-hand side on the home page in the recent activity module, what we call the ticker. So when a user uploads a file, it shows up that a ticker story is delivered about that file upload to other relevant users in the same network that work for the same company. There are some other concepts too. We have the concept of groups. Each group has its own feed and its own publisher and its own set of files and et cetera. And then we also have the concept of files and apps. So we're here today mostly to talk about apps. So I'll kind of drill down into there. Okay, so Yammer has an app directory and we have a bunch of apps in there. Our new cloud app was just announced. If anybody saw that press release or blog post into our app directory. So what are we trying to do though with our app directory, with our platform, with our APIs? So at Yammer, much like a lot of other collaboration software product vendors, we talk a lot about breaking down silos. So that's what probably a lot of people in this room are also trying to do. There are the obvious silos that everyone talks about and sees every day. Those are the silos kind of reinforced by the org chart that people, report up through the chain to the CEO, but they, people in HR probably don't know a whole lot of people in sales and might not know a whole lot of people in even marketing or the development team, depending on what they do. So we're trying to break down silos in the Yammer product by making sure that messages, when posted, are default open. So what we do in Yammer a lot is we manage our projects not using distribution lists or this any kind of closed task management system, but just by using a Yammer group per project that's default open, so even people that aren't in the group can go through and kind of update themselves on the status of what's going on without you having to ask me for a status report. Okay, so that's kind of one of the ways we try to break down silos, but we see another pernicious siloing effect coming from the apps that people use day to day. And some of those apps are shown up here in this slide where, you know, people are storing their files in SharePoint or Box. Maybe, you know, you might have like multiple instances of these throughout your organization. And, you know, you might have the salespeople all working in CRM, the support people all working in Zendesk or something, and, you know, the finance people working in ERP. So every kind of business unit has kind of adopted its own set of tools, and there are only a few ways really to unlock the value of the data that are in those tools. The predominant way in the enterprise right now we see is like continuous integration, like heavy-handed take data from one system, transform it, and put it into another system, or, you know, maybe you adopt a new, you know, you adopt Microsoft Dynamics, but you still have like Salesforce, so there's this weird like syncing thing. There's whole businesses that are built off of just keeping data in sync across different vendor platforms. So we don't want to be in that business at Yammer. What we want to do is kind of bring people together by referencing that data in the Yammer network and also putting our conversational, like social widgets into these other products. So if I were to give you any advice today, I would say, like, start a business that competes with one of the logos on this slide and, you know, make it a social Yammer connected freemium you know, version of one of these, and you'll instantly, and also then use engagement and growth as your core metrics instead of just, you know, monetization at first, because that's really what our platform is designed to do, to give you users and to re-engage users in your product when they're using Yammer. They'll see your product's data in Yammer, they'll be able to have conversations about it in Yammer, they'll go into your product, they'll see the Yammer thread that's relevant, and they'll be able to continue that conversation in the product. So people can talk about the data that's in your product without even having a license or a login for your product. It's one of the reasons that we love the philosophy of Open Graph. So Open Graph was introduced by Facebook in 2010. We kind of really liked that idea. At the time, we were just, you know, a set of REST-based APIs like most cloud tools have. So we enhanced that. We adopted parts of the Open Graph protocol that we think makes sense for the enterprise. And we ended up with some stuff that you might be familiar with. So there's this, we have a sign-in with Yammer button. You can kind of completely replace your auth if you want to go that far. Or you can just use it to connect a user's account in your system with their Yammer account, and then you instantly get, you know, you'll get their OAuth access token, you'll instantly get access to all of this content that's relevant to that user who connected their account. So they'll sign in with Yammer, and you get all the people that they follow, you know all the groups that they're in, and you kind of know a lot about them. You can present really relevant content to them. You can also embed Yammer actions in your product, like clicking a like button or a follow button. What that does is send object metadata into Yammer and also subscribes that user to the Yammer Open Graph object representation of the object that's in your system. And it makes it a lot easier for them to, they can find the object in our search now. They can see conversations about the object even if they don't have a license in your system, as I mentioned before. And then they can get notified when things happen, like somebody updates an object in your system that they're following in Yammer, they'll get a Yammer update about that. Okay, so you can also send activity stories to send object metadata. So this is where it gets like, you can, you know, get even more and more fancy with how you integrate with Yammer. If something happens that's interesting in your system, you can send that to Yammer, and Yammer users will see that that thing happened. So-and-so approved a contract, or, you know, so-and-so shared a file. You can surface that information in Yammer, and that's one of those features that re-engages people back into your product. And the way that you can use that for growth in a very literal sense is somebody that doesn't have a license for your product finds out about something interesting happening in your product via Yammer, which they do have like this free account in, and then they talk to their boss and they're like, hey, I need a license for this. So there's a direct monetization impact for some of these integration like concepts as well. So yeah, why Open Graph? I kind of got ahead of myself and talked about this, but Open Graph is the way to do kind of an easy, lightweight data integration that drives user growth and engagement. We're not like an API that's set up to do some kind of heavy-handed sync process, like I mentioned. What we're looking to do is be the social layer across business applications. We think we can provide value to those business applications by driving user growth and engagement in them, and we're looking to increase our stickiness in businesses as most products are, so we like, you know, the idea of having a footprint where users are doing work. Okay, so that was my pitch on Open Graph and why it's so great. We have other stuff too. We have our normal REST APIs, and those are important to use as well, like post data, get data, that type of thing, messages, groups, files, the normal Yammer stuff. We have a data export API, which is kind of purpose-built for data archiving and data retention type solutions. So if you're building one of those, then this is probably the place to start. And then we also have some SDKs. The one that's probably most relevant for the people in this room is the JavaScript SDK. It kind of just helps you get to a point where you can easily send REST calls and Open Graph calls from JavaScript.
All right, so now that Neil's talked about what Yammer can do, let's talk about how you can use the Yammer API to build what you need to build. What we've done is the team here, me, Jose, Shunli, and Marvin, we've built a demo app that we hope that you can take and just quickly start hitting the Yammer API, start consuming it, and start playing around with it and see what you can do with it. So the first thing I want to show you is... So as Neil was showing you, this is a Yammer home feed. On this page, you'll see a list of postings here. And then on the top right-hand side, you'll see the activity. What we'll show you in this demo is how to get a post up to the feed and also how to get an activity onto the home page here. So this is our app. It's called Contracts Meow. So we're like in a world where we're all cats and we're dealing with contracts. So first thing you see here is our login page. What you'll notice is we ask for Yammer credentials. So some companies that use Yammer, they actually will maintain users within Yammer. Other larger companies will sync systems up like Active Directory to Yammer. Either way, you would use the same credentials you use on Yammer to log into the app. And this is a Windows 8 app, obviously. So here are our contracts. You can see in the top right-hand corner, I'm logged in as Neil. And I want to create a new contract. I'll hit this new button down here. And this would kind of, we're trying to emulate an enterprise system, in this case, a procurement system. One thing you'll notice is that there's some forms, fields that you may want to fill out, and then a list of assignees or users. This is actually pulled directly from Yammer and displayed back to the user here. And you'll notice that the list is not alphabetical. It's actually ranked. We rank these on the Yammer side based off of your social interactions with these particular users. So in this case, it seems like Neil really interacts with Patrick a lot and Udo, and less so with himself, obviously, or Marvin. So let me just fill this in. So let's say we want 100 pounds of catnip. We need to refill. And let's say, let's touch a few people here. And let's create it. All right, so we created a new contract for 100 pounds of catnip. What does that mean? Okay, so let's go to the Yammer, and hopefully if everything works out here, boom. You notice that I got a notification. I was one of the assignees to that contract. Let me click and see my new message. You can see the assignees are listed here. I got my message. This is our Open Graph object that Neil talked about. And you can also see in the top right-hand corner our recent activities. So there's an event, an Open Graph event that happened. And we post it here. So let's say I click into this. Oh, I don't know why there's more. Okay. So all of these Open Graph objects are geared towards a unique identifier. In this case, a URL. I just copied that, and I'm going to show you how that got into the system, or what you can do with it once it's into the system. So let's say you're going to post a new message. If I copy and paste that in there, you'll see that Yammer parsed that message, looked within Yammer, and pulled back the exact same Open Graph object so that you can continue that conversation later on. So you don't necessarily need to go back and find this particular post and continue communication there. So, so how did we do this? This was entirely built on top of our Yammer REST API. Just follows standard REST protocols and guidelines. And we do recommend that you use JSON as your data exchange format just because we find it a little faster to parse. Authentication. Authentication is normally the largest hurdle for people to start consuming an API. First, to actually integrate with Yammer, you'll need a client ID and a client secret. Neil will talk about that in a little bit. But basically, once you have these, you'll be able to get an access token for a user. And once you get an access token for a user, that's basically the password for that user to pull data back from the Yammer API. And you'll need to provide that in a header field called authorization with the value of bearer and the actual token. You'll pass forward to us. So let's jump into the code and talk about how we actually did this and what we've done. So here is this, the Contracts Meow app. This was a pretty simple app, right? We had like four screens on there. We had some form fields and posted it up to Yammer. However, we have six projects on here. Why did we do that? Well, the team, we kind of discussed this, like we could have easily just built some simple app, put a bunch of things in the code behind and show you like some HTTP calls, but we built this really so that it's gonna be reusable for you. We have a couple layers here. We have our API project here, which is gonna be all of your API client calls back to the to Yammer. Well, not all of them. This is really a few good examples of how to do this. And then we have what we call our data layer or services layer. And here, basically right now, it's just gonna be a pass-through from the modern app to a service layer to the client. But if you're gonna really integrate this into a different system, you may wanna put additional logic in there. And obviously we have the modern app. This is the Windows 8 app. And then we have a common set of libraries that can be shared across different projects. So the first thing, let's look at the login code. So when you log into Yammer, right, so here I have it up here already. So on our login view model, we basically call this auth client call. So it's called auth async. And you pass in, all you really need to do is pass in the username and password, and we'll actually handle the rest for you with this library. You can see that we'll create a set of parameters, and then we'll call something called post async. Post async is something we created. I'm just gonna go to definition of this, and you'll notice that I jumped to a file called client base. All of our clients are inherit client base, and you'll get all of these type of calls within your API clients. And post async is really now just a really, if you look at this, a wrapper for something called execute async, which is something that eventually calls HTTP client dot send async out. And we do this to make it easier to send that that header authorization bearer token so that all of our calls then will automatically have that every time you need it to hit the Yammer API. So I'm gonna jump into this and we can see how we kind of do this. And to be honest, this client base is really generic. You might be able to use it in other places. So if you guys ever need, you know, like an example of how to hit the API and get some data back, I would recommend looking at this. So this is our generic execute async call. We can actually use this to do put commands, post commands, delete commands through the HTTP client. And what's neat about this is that we'll actually get the set of parameters. Sometimes these parameters for an API endpoint, you wanna provide query string parameters. And this, we have a little helper in here that will convert this object to an actual query string parameter that you can then just send off to the API. So where does some of this magic happen? It's in this HTTP request object that we created. Here we're instantiating it, and then we'll eventually call execute request async. And here we have authenticate client, and this is where we'll add that. Then go to two, implementation. You can see this is where we're adding that authorization token once we get it back to the HTTP calls. So what we did was we tried to make it simple. We tried to make it kind of like a real world project where you guys can take this, hit the API, and potentially integrate it with another sample project. So now that I've talked about kind of like the base layer of connecting to the API and some of the plumbing that we've built out, I'm going to hand it off to Jose, and he's going to talk about the actual endpoints that Yammer has and what you can do with them.
Thank you, Duong. So let's go back to the presentation. So as Neil mentioned, Yammer is a social platform for communication, and we offer many endpoints and many different functionality for you to plug into the data that we have and start gathering more information about your users and also bring more engagement. So I'm going to start with just mentioning some of those like the main endpoints that we use in, or people use in our API. Autocomplete, as its name suggests, is about providing relevant information to the user depending on what they are typing. I'm going to come back to this in a few moments. Messages, as you can guess, and as Neil mentioned as well, messages are one of the most important models in our system or in our platform. So through this API, you can get messages, you can post messages or replies, you can get conversations. What we call a conversation basically is a set of messages when you have a head or a thread starter, which is the main message, and then replies. And you can have feeds, which is a set of conversations that belong to a group or a domain. You have attachments. The attachments endpoint will provide you with a way to register attachments or to get the IDs for those attachments so that you can download them later. Attachments can be files, images, messages, conversations, or open graph objects. Search will help you look up information related to users, groups, and topics. That's the main differentiation between search and autocomplete. And then notifications. Through that, you can get real-time updates to your users about messages that have been posted to their inbox, invites to different groups or networks. And then there are more API endpoints that you can look up at our developers' website. So before we go on, I want to mention about rate limits. As with any public API, we need to maintain certain level on our SLAs. So we want to separate the well-behaved clients from the spamming clients. For that, we have different rate limits per endpoint. Autocomplete is one of the endpoints that is hit most of the time, simply because of the nature of it. I mean, the moment your users start typing, you could start sending requests to get more information, more contextual information. So we allow, or we have this 10 by 10 rule that we call, so it's 10 requests per 10 seconds, or roughly one per second. Messages and notifications are a little less, the activity there is a little slower, so we only allow 10 requests per 30 seconds. And any other endpoint will have the same 10 by 10 rule as autocomplete. So what does that mean as a developer? When you go, or when a user of your application starts kind of like just hitting on, the button, or you have, for whatever reason, you are requesting too much information to the network, you will start getting 429s as a response from our API with a message that says, too many requests. So from there on, if you don't slow down or throttle down your request, you will keep getting that. So you have to wait, depending on the API endpoint that you are hitting, you will have to wait between 10 to 30 seconds to start getting, again, information from the network. So you have to be careful about that. So coming back to autocomplete, as I mentioned, autocomplete is very useful to bring information that is, or contextual information to that user. at Yammer, as the social platform that it is, it will rank the information that is input into the system according to the user that is trying to access that information. So you have it will assign a weight. So when I start sending an autocomplete request to the API associated to a user ID, it's going to start bringing information depending, you can bring many different models. You can bring users, you can bring groups, open graphs, et cetera. So it will start bringing those models that are more relevant, socially relevant to that user. So it actually is leveraging all of that, you know, social context for that user. So a couple of things to consider here. As I mentioned, there's a rate limit that you can hit very fast if you are not careful. So when a user starts typing information to the publisher, it's always good to wait like at least to the third or fourth character that is typed to send that as a prefix and start getting that information. That will give you a better user experience in general, but it also will help you prevent reaching that rate limit. So this is the complete URL that we use for getting that ranked information. And as I mentioned, you can get different models from the system through this API endpoint. You specify that by using query parameters. You use the keyword model, and then there are a few examples there. You can specify a group, specify a user, open graph, et cetera, and then the number of elements you want to get back that is separated by a colon in that parameter. So if you are developing a nice, you know, publisher or text box where you want to have this autocomplete feature showing up like a pop-up menu and give some options to the user, it's always, you know, good to limit your response or the number of elements you get back to about 5 to 10 elements. You only have so much real estate on your screen, so you want to improve that user experience. Then on top of that, you can also assign or specify a prefix. So for instance, if I am just type in the name Matt. I can assign that to the request as using the prefix parameter in the query string, and then the platform will only look for any socially relevant data that starts with those four characters. And that applies to anything, to any model. So this is how the response looks on JSON. So all the information you're getting back from the REST API is JSON. So you have an array named user that contains all of the user, or in this case users, a list of users that are relevant to that query. So you will have, in this case, you will have the minimum information that is viable to display for your application. So Open Graph, you've heard a lot of Open Graph by now. As Neil mentioned, this is the way we integrate different activity into our platform. And you can create custom activities as well. So that, you know, it's just allows you to be, or allows you to be flexible and allows you to build anything you can virtually want to integrate into Yammer. So talking about activities, for any activity in the Open Graph object, we need a minimum set of information. We need an actor, which is the user that is, you know, executing or performing that action. We need the action, which is basically a verb. We support some standard actions. We support create, update, delete, follow, and like. And then through the website, you can create custom actions in case none of these fit what you want to do. You need the actual Open Graph object. Obviously, as Tuong mentioned, the URL is very important as we use that as the ID of the Open Graph. And then the application name and the message, and also a list of users if there is anything, if you want to relate the users to this particular activity or action. So this is how it looks in JSON. You have an activity object that is serialized into, this JSON object, with the actor, the object, the message, and the array of users. There is also a optional parameter called private that if you set to true, this is a Boolean parameter. If you set it to true, it means that this particular activity will be private and only the users that are specified, including the creator, will be able to see that activity. Kind of defeat the social aspect of the network, though. So one other consideration here is you can either send single activities per request, or you can batch them into a single request, batch, I don't know, 5, 10, how many activities you are creating in a single request, and that will give you the advantage of reducing latency and, you know, all the network performance practices that are recommended. So let me go a little bit to the code. This one running. So I want to just do a quick demo of the autocomplete, see if this works. As you know, with any live demos, usually we have problems, but we'll try to make it run. So if we go to the autocomplete client. So if I remember correctly, the application gathers, the user that you saw in the application, it gathers basically the information from the user. In this case, I'm looking at myself. It's Neil McCartney. Okay. So it's just a long domain here. Build conference. All right, let's see. Oh, I didn't hit the breakpoint. All right, there you go. So as Truong was mentioning, we put a lot of thought on this project to try to make it as generic as possible so you can pretty much reuse it and, you know, kickstart your application. In this case, we are hitting the autocomplete client. And as you can see, we are sending the credentials, which is basically the user principal. By the moment we reach this point, obviously, we have already authenticated the user and got the token. So that's what we have here in the access token, and this is what's going to be injected into that header later on as part of the request. And then we have the parameters. In this case, I'm specifying I want the first 50 users that match my prefix. I'm not specifying a prefix, so that means that the platform is going to return users in alphabetical order that are matching the rank of my particular user. I don't know if that makes sense, but what I meant is the platform will take my user ID, will bring all of those models that are user models that are relevant in the social context that my user is registered to. So since there is no prefix, it will just bring alphabetically. If I was adding like an M or an A or a B, it will start just by that letter and try to match that information. And then, well, we use the async await synthetic sugar that .NET 4.5 is offering now, and we wrap that result into this object that helps us abstract exceptions when they happen, and then you can see the response here. So this is the user ID, my user ID, and then this is the list of users that are relevant to me, and that's their, basically, the models. There you go. And that's what we have here. Now, thanks. So, DTOs and models. I think that's something very important in our platform. We have a lot of information in the platform. I mean, it took the team about, I don't know, several weeks to come up with a comprehensive set of models and DTOs. And we created these portable class libraries for you to start using. We were going to open source this project probably in CodePlex and GitHub for those that are Git addicts. And you're going to be able to start, let me just show the very quickly the DTOs, to start using those portable class libraries. Now, who here has heard about portable class libraries? Okay, a few people, that's good. So as you know, in .NET 4.5, it's trying to target many different platforms at the same time. Windows Phone, .NET 4.5, full profile, ASP.NET and MVC, and then Windows RT. So the Portal Class Library basically is a format that allows you to share code among all of those different platforms with no cost. And that's why we decided to go with that profile on the assemblies that represented DTO. So here they are. As you can see, it's a lot of classes. That's how rich the API is. And we'll be open sourcing this very soon. So Nick, back to you. Neil, back to you.
Okay. Actually, I'm going to show something on this real quick. Okay, so for those of you who already have Yammer accounts, you probably already noticed that there's an apps link up here. Maybe you haven't. If you click on it, you get the apps directory. So kind of what I'm talking about now is how do you get hands-on? You could, you know, download this open source project and start hacking away. But you might want to get hands-on with an integrated app like before you start coding and, you know, before you commit to actually doing this work. So something that we did previously was we made a web app and open sourced it to kind of promote our platform and also so that users could get hands-on with an integrated app. It's called Skidoo. So if you log in with Yammer, you know, there's no problem if you're just a free user. You can go to the app directory, go down to Skidoo, and click try it. It's going to take you through the normal OAuth allow deny screen, and then it will, you know, you can kind of just play with it. It's an app that lets you create an event and then invite some people to that event, and then they vote on times that work for them. And then there's some examples of Yammer sending a Yammer private message with an Open Graph object attached, sending activity stories. Autocomplete is in there. Of course, OAuth for web is in there. So if any of you are working on a web app, then that's really going to be a better example for you to use than the Contract Meow app. And at the end of this presentation, there's a resources slide with the code, the location of the code of the web app. So we're actually going to leave you with two example apps today. Okay. All right. So, how do you get started being a Yammer developer? So the first thing to do is sign up for Yammer. Again, you can just be a free user, but you have to sign up with a corporate email address. You can't sign up with like Gmail or Outlook because those aren't, you know, we're an enterprise tool, so we blacklist those types of email accounts. Then you should also request access to this thing called the Yammer Developer Network. There's a link in the resources slide of this presentation. So this is a place where we have thousands of developers on the Yammer platform using a Yammer external network to collaborate, ask us questions, answer each other's questions, post their projects. So there's a little bit of promotion appeal in there and a little bit of like Q&A and FAQ type of you know, questions going on in there. So then, you know, once you're ready to begin playing with the API, you need to create a Yammer app. So you go to /client_applications. And you'll go through a flow where you, you know, pick a name and give us your email address and stuff. It's really like a lightweight sign-up flow for creating an app initially. So the gotcha here is that unlike with many other products out there, we have a little bit of extra security kind of applied to our app registration process. You can register an app, you'll get a client key and a client secret, you'll be able to hit our API with your account, and you'll also be able to offer your app for installation to any other user that's in your network. But if you are, for example, a consultant and you're building an app for one of your customers, they're not going to be able to authorize your application unless you join their network, or more likely, if you're like building an app that you want to market to the whole world and you want everybody to be able to integrate their Yammer accounts with it, then you're going to need to talk to us and we'll like, you know, do a security review and talk to you about partnership and, you know, get you to sign some stuff, and then we'll approve your app to go global. And that's what is necessary to, you know, develop an app that any Yammer user can install. Okay, so the goal for you, hopefully, should be to get into the app directory. So one of the things that we like to say is that we can, if you're building a new app, we can get you your first user. And the way we do that is in the App Directory. We have thousands of users a day surfing through here, just kind of checking things out, different users every day, typically, and installing random apps and playing with them. So this is where, like, power users of Yammer and early adopters go to, you know, experiment with new stuff. So we can get your first user that way, and then it's kind of up to you to build in, you know, viral and engaging features that get users to adopt your app. And this is why, you know, this kind of model is why freemium apps work best integrated with Yammer compared to, like, trial-based apps or, you know, non-freemium apps, just, you know, standard legacy types of apps. So if the goal is how to get in the App Directory, I'll just go ahead and talk about how you get in there. So you get your app working, and there's that, you know, simple sign-up registration form process that I talked about where you just enter the name of the app, basically, and your email address. But then what you need to do in order to get into the App Directory is, once you get it working, upload a bunch of assets. So you've probably done this if you've gone into other App Directories where you upload screenshots and logos and you type out a description and have, like, a support email and stuff like that for users if they get stuck. So you do that, and then an interesting thing here is that before you talk to us, you can deploy your app into your network's App Directory. So this is where, like, if you're an IT person at a company, you can develop an app for your company, and we don't have to approve that. You can release it into your company's App Directory and then send out a, you know, friendly Yammer message or email that says, hey, if you want to use this new internal IT-built app, just go into your Yammer account, go to the App Directory, and install it. So it can reduce friction for that kind of scenario, too. So then you get to the point where you have to decide, do I need this to be global? Do I need to, you know, be able to market this app to everybody? And do I want it to be in every Yammer Network's App Directory? And if the answer is yes, then you have to do steps four and five, where you go into your app settings and you click a button that, like, requests us to review it. And then we reach out to you and we review it and then we approve it. And you chat with our business development team because there may be some kind of, like, co-marketing we can do. We go to a lot of conferences. We do a lot of like talks at Hack Days and stuff. So we like to promote partners there. Also, there's a featured section in the Yammer App Directory where we'll put, like, well, often for new apps, we'll put them up there for at least a couple weeks. And if we have some kind of promotion going on, then we'll put apps up at the top there in the featured section to get some more installs for them. Okay, so here is our resources slide. Which contains all the links to stuff we talked about today. So there's developer.yammer.com, which is our WordPress, like, developer site that you can learn about all the APIs and get all the documentation from. There's the Yammer Developer Network, YDN, so just go to that link and you'll click a, like, request access button. Make sure to upload a photo, because then you'll, like, be more friendly in the network. Then the Contract Meow source code, it's a Windows 8 app, this one that they were showing. We're going to release that probably on CodePlex also, but there's the GitHub link that it will be available at when we're done polishing it up just for open source ability. Then there's the Skidoo app. You can find it in the App Directory or just at its normal domain name, like, link, you know, URL, www.sked.do. And the source code for that is also on GitHub, and then the place to register a new app, which I already mentioned. Okay. So, yeah, I think we're done a little bit early. Are there any questions? REST API, Open Graph, Freemium, YDN? Yeah, do you want to use the mic?
Just a couple of questions. Can Yammer be installed on on-prem scenarios?
No. So Yammer is cloud only. There's only one, it's like one multi-tenant web cloud solution. Yammer.com is the only URL.
And, so with SharePoint, so mm-hmm. SharePoint Online and Yammer can work together, but can SharePoint on-prem and Yammer
sure,
work
yeah.
together?
Yeah. So it depends, you know, how you architect your integration, but you know, the SharePoint server could make calls out to Yammer.com or the users, you could put some JavaScript that loads into the user's browser that could be calling out to Yammer.com. I mean, as soon as you talk about on-prem integrations, there's, like, firewall implications that you have to worry about. But yeah, we actually have an old web part for SharePoint 2010 on-prem that we built before we were acquired that does basically what I just described. It calls out, you know, through the firewall and, you know, does what it needs to do. Okay. Well, hope everyone enjoyed Build. I know we did. And have a good trip home if you're going home.